Okay.
We're gonna get this party started again.
Okay, no problem.
Welcome back to another episode of Vibe With Me. I'm your host, Rashad, and today I have somebody I do not know, but that's okay. Before the end of this episode, we gonna be friends. From the all-female band, Climax, Cheryl Cooley, how you feeling?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be here on your show with you. Thank you.
Thank you for making time for me. I appreciate you. But with everything going on right now and you doing everything you've done, like I said, I've done my research on you, so, you know, be prepared. But for having a female band, what do you say all your challenges were?
You know, at first, really having people take us seriously because, you know, in the 80s, being an all-female band, you know, R&B all-female band was, you know, first ever heard of, and people weren't, you know, quite sure what to expect. And one of the examples is, you know, when the DJs would announce our first album, they would say, oh, here's a band, Climax. And then the second album, they would say, oh, here's the band, Climax. And then by the time our third album came, Meeting in the Ladies Room, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, and here's Climax. So, but by that time, you know, video had came, you know, started being popular, and people, video came out for the audiences to see, you know, what an all-female band performing looked like. So that really helped us out as far as the acceptance of the, you know, the audiences and the fans and all of that.
Yeah. Put some respect on their name. So, but, and besides what you had to deal with right there, also, I wanted to know, did y'all ever have, and this is this is left field, but I want to know this too. Did y'all ever have any, like, male bands y'all felt like y'all was competing with? Like, say y'all came to an event, right? And, like, a male band came up to y'all and was like, y'all ain't nothing. We way better than y'all, band.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you a little big secret.
Okay.
That still goes on today.
I kind of figured it, though, because I remember back in the day when I used to see all the little movies with all these little bands, and it'd be egos all the time. Like, maybe your lead singer don't like this other lead singer. He think he can dress better than me. He think he prettier than me. Because, you know, back in the day, that's all they were talking about back then.
Yeah.
At least in the movies. They'd be like, he think he a pretty boy. So I used to be like, oh, they were so conceited back then. But I used to be like, oh, I wish I could have seen it firsthand, because I know they was just, and but, you know, and it still happens today, just like you said, even in the younger groups, they still like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even some of the old school tours that we're on, you know, some of the guys, even from back in the day, they're like, oh yeah, you know, Climax, they were just a lip sync band, until all of a sudden they see us pick up instruments and really hear and see us live, then it's like, oh yeah, they really are playing.
and that's the thing too. I feel like, even though I was never in a band, but I just feel like that some people always feel, especially say y'all both play the same instrument,
right?
Nobody wants to be outdone. But especially back in the day, I felt like some of the men might have been like, oh man, ain't no woman about to upstage me. And right, then you watch it from the side of the stage like, man, they out there killing it.
Right, right.
We ain't got no song like that. So I definitely can picture that.
Yeah.
But, you know, also too, and I asked this question before, but I wanted to ask it to you because everybody has a different answer to this. What do you feel like was the best city that you toured in?
Well, you know, back in the day, we always liked to go to Biloxi, Mississippi. And because of the beach, and you know, we really had a good time there. But, you know, every city that we went to, I mean, and even going to now, every city and town has its own kind of characteristic. So, right. I mean, I don't know if any one can outdo the other, because every time you go to a, you know, another city, it's like, oh, I remember we used to get, you know, some good, whatever food was there, or I want to go to this mall, or I want to go see this sightseeing, you know, this monument or something. So every city really has something, you know, memorable about it. And really, all of the audiences in each city, they're always very receptive and very kind to us and, you know, come to see our shows, which is great. You know, even though we're from California, a lot of people think California is, you know, a foreign state. But, you know, once they get to the concerts and we get a chance to really interact with them, then, you know, it's always a pleasant trip and a pleasant stay in all the different cities that we go to.
Yeah, when I was talking to, I don't know if you know him, but I had a real good talk with Brother Phil, and we was talking about Cali, and I told him I've never been, and I've always wanted to go because I got friends out there, but I keep interviewing all these people from Cali. I'm about to be family in a little bit.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to come to the cookout cousin.
Right.
Interview. Hey, interviewing the whole crew.
Right, so, exactly.
I'm like, I know them, but I don't know them. So technically, I'm with them. So I'm the publicist. So. But, you know, and that's the thing, you know, it's just about, you know, being welcomed and, you know, people loving on you. And I say this, and I don't mean to boast on a certain city or state. But I've always said, even when I was talking to Brother Phil, I was like, it's something about people in Cali. They have a loving spirit. Like, I've met some of the most wonderful people and warm-hearted from Cali.
Oh, wow. That's
and I can say that because I've met a few people. And I'll tell them all the time, like, what it is, I don't even understand, you know. It's just something about just y'all as the people, man. Y'all show love. Aww. Y'all be showing country love. You know, y'all really do. I'd be like, I just feel like I can just eat at your table, you know, like, can I get some chicken and rice while we just talking about, you know, just talking about nothing, just sitting down, eating and fellowshipping.
Yeah.
So, and that means a lot, because, you know, people don't have to be nice to you in this life.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Not at all. But the fact that people can be nice to you and they don't even know you is a blessing.
Right.
So
right.
I really do appreciate that. And I don't take it lightly for the people that I cross paths with. Right. Something is always said in that transaction for me to always say, you know what? We kinfolk now. Mm-hmm. So, and that means a lot. Because some people you don't vibe with. You can have one conversation and be like, yeah, that's it. We probably won't ever speak again. We'll cross paths, but we won't ever speak again. You know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
But, you know, enough about the sentimental stuff. We got to get into the bread and butter. So, but, you know, we just having conversation. That's it. I don't look at them as interviews. I call them interviews because that's what they are. I didn't really conversate with folk. And then, you know, they always say, oh, I didn't even feel like an interview. I'm like, I'm not an interviewer. I'm a conversationalist.
Right, right.
You know, I like to have conversation. Whatever we talk about is what we talk about. I don't have no outline or anything. I have a few questions in my head, but I don't have no outline. So wherever the train goes, hey, just stay on it. You know.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
But what I can say too, also, just about all the songs that I've seen y'all play, But it's two songs in particular I want to talk about. So, okay, we're going to start with Meet in the Lady Room. So, Meet in the Lady Room, right? This is what I want to know. Were you part of the concept of the song? And if you are, I got another question after that.
Well, actually, the song was written by Midnight Star, who was actually one of our label mates. They were on the same record label with us. And it's a true story. What happened was one of the guys from Midnight Star was at a club with his girlfriend. And one of the girls from Climax happened to walk in and saw him there. Well, since we're label mates, she was all excited to see him and ran over and hugged and kissed him and everything and showing love. And the girlfriend was like, well, who is this girl all over my man? So she got mad and she got up from the table and she went to the ladies' room. And the guy thought, that's a great idea for a song, meeting in the ladies' room.
You know, when I saw the video, it's one thing to hear the song, but when I saw the video, it took a whole new meaning. Because now I'm like, why is all this going on in the ladies' room? Like, you had the dude in the little, I don't know if that was a straight jacket or a chair. He all dancing, nipples out and all this. And I'm just like, what is this, the ladies' room? And I'm like, it's a lot of fun things. It's some interesting stuff going on in the ladies' room. I'm just like,
right, what? Exactly. Yeah.
Why? It couldn't have been called just the room, but but you know, I just was always wondering what was the concept behind it. But now it all makes sense now. Now that you explained it that way, I can see that, you know. And, you know, speaking of rooms, some of the best songs are written through pain. I don't know why. It's like it just brings something out of you, not even just the creative side. It's just something about you pouring your heart out in the music. People feel it, especially if they was going through it. Yeah. They'd be like, you know what? I just got cheated on. And this is the elixir I need to get through. You be playing that song forever. You know the whole song. By the end of the week, you might still be hurt, but you healing yourself by listening. This gonna be your anthem. You're gonna be telling people, yeah, this the cheater's anthem right here.
Oh wow. Yeah.
Just like with Usher. When Usher had that Confessions album, he was crying the whole album. But everybody loved it. He was talking about what he went through, and I mean, I couldn't feel what he was going through. I wasn't going through that, but I liked the album. He was making some good music. I said, dang, people get hurt and make platinum albums. We need to get some more hurt people, man. Oh! They is making some real good music in this pain.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not advocating people to get hurt, but what I'm saying is they are making great music while they in pain.
Yeah.
That need to be a name of somebody's album. Feel My Pain. Oh, I ain't coming out with it because I don't get in the studio. I mean, I should, just because it's on my mind right now. I'm going to talk to my manager when this is over. We ain't getting the studio. I can't be having these ideas and not putting them into fruition. I don't want nobody to take my idea. I need to be able to do it. And then, yeah. But, and that's the thing, you know, I wouldn't even want no fame from it. Just let me put my CD out. Let me get my what I need to say out, and that be it. I don't want no videos. Just let me just go on SoundCloud, put my stuff out. Because you know, because the first thing somebody gonna say is, "Oh, when he started doing music, now he do music." And I never get that. People love to put you in the box, boy. They be like, "Oh, I thought he just do this. He do music." Who?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I just don't get. But yeah, we need more of that pain music.
We do. Wow.
We do. I feel like that's what we're missing right now. I don't think right now we have a pain album. Like right now is that's right. We don't have none of that at this moment. We got some happy songs. We got a couple love songs. We got a little bit of everything right now, but we don't have none of that pain. We don't have that true pain right now. Yeah, we don't have that. Somebody just needs to be. It's a lot of divorces right now, so maybe we need to get with them and see what they got to say. They might have something to put in the studio. Shoot, you don't know what happened in that house. We might get it all on the album. So that's my thing. And also too, This is segueing into also what I had to ask you. So, y'all were storytellers too.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I was listening, I want to get the name of that song right. It was called Man's Curse.
What? Man-sized love or the menopause?
Menopause, that was it. That's why I said I didn't want to get the name wrong. When I heard that song, right, it said a lot to me in that song, y'all. It was, and y'all was getting the crowd hype at one point. And at one point, y'all was telling the man what to, y'all was telling the men what to do. Right. Y'all was giving the men a little bit of game, you know. I'm listening to the song like, y'all better listen up. You have, and see, I don't see, that's what the game missing too. I'm glad I've been listening and doing my research, because sometimes you got to go back to go forward. Because if you notice, back in the day, they was telling you everything in the song.
Yeah.
You knew exactly what was going on.
Right. Well,
if somebody was getting cheated on, they told it in the song. They told you the name, who it was with. I was like, they told you too much.
Wow.
Hey, I am a music connoisseur. Mm-hmm. I just love to break down stuff. I was just like, wait a minute, did they just say where it was at? They told you where, who was with, when it happened, where they was. I'm like, they didn't. Are they police officers? Where they get all this? Where they get these skills though? Just put all this together.
Like, oh wow.
But a lot of people who don't listen to music, they don't really think about all that while they're listening. They just like, oh. You heard the new song? Did you break down the lyrics? You heard what he said? He told you how he was feeling in the first verse. Go to the second verse, the bridge. He really, he bringing it home. So I need to get in the studio. I'm mad now. I need to really get in the studio. And then, yeah, me and my manager, we definitely gonna have a talk. I got popping. Sometimes when you want stuff done, you gotta do it yourself. But like I said, that's why I love to bounce back and forth from the music back in the day to the music now. And sometimes I love when people pay homage to people before them, when they use the samples from the older music. Oh, I mm-hmm. love that. As long as they don't mess it up, as long as they like have mm-hmm. a good song with it. Don't use the sample and just destroy the song. Nah, do something good with it. You see what's going on, but yeah, most of the time when the samples get cleared, they as long as we can know what they're saying, because sometimes we don't know what they're saying. We're like, oh, what are you saying? I don't know. I don't know. Just go along with it. Just play the next song. We'll figure that one out another day. But that's what I miss though. I miss that type of music. But out of all the albums y'all made, what do you think was y'all best album?
Oh wow. I actually think the last album we did called Max Is Back, I think it was probably the best album that we did. But you know, we had a lot of learning experience under our belt to really know how to produce and write songs by then.
Now, are y'all still with the same label y'all been with, or y'all changed labels?
Well, no, I mean, we were with the same label for 10 years, but you know, of course, the music industry has changed now, so everybody's doing their own independent thing.
So when it comes to, because I've never been on a label, so I always wanted to know this. When it comes to signing for your label, right, is there a certain amount of albums y'all have to have while y'all sign to that label?
Well, you know, it's interesting because back in the day, you know, used the contract would say, you know, one album per year, and you could the record company had the right to renew your contract every year. So sometimes, you know, you would be on a label for, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 years. But, you know, nowadays the way the contracts read is that, you know, you have, you know, one record, one album, one project per contract. You know, they don't even go through a duration. They just get the product so they can promote it and make a profit of it, and you know, to heck with the artists.
Yeah, because and I've heard that a lot too. I've heard a lot of people say that a lot of people are going indie because I think they feel like that, you know, they keep more of their money, and the regular, you know, the major label, they're getting backed by the label, but they're also getting screwed by the label too.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, that again has to do with, you know, one thing I always tell new artists, young artists, you know, artists trying to get in, no matter what age they are, you know, if you go to a record label and you're going to sign a contract, you have to walk in with an attorney. You can't expect to like read the contract and think you know all the ins and outs, because, you know, contracts for, you know, labels, they go for, you know, they talk about the whole entire duration of the project or the contract or the relationship. You really have to walk in with an attorney that can read that contract and know what it's saying. So, you know, there's a lot of technical stuff that, you know, I'll say the average musician or artist may not know that an attorney would understand. So there's just, you know, so many avenues that your inflow of money and or royalties can be affected by just the wording in the contract. So you really have to know what's being read and what's being signed. Some contracts, well, at least, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, some contracts, they advanced the artist. Like maybe the first year you didn't make much money. The next year you made, you know, 10%. The next year you made 50%. So it was a progression of the amount of percentages of royalties shares that you could get. But nowadays, you know, since there's so many independent labels, independent, executives that can promote music, you know, it's just kind of a hodgepodge or, you know, a smorgasbord for, you know, what's fair and what's not fair in a contract. It really depends on the two people negotiating what will be good for both parties involved. But like, again, for any artist out there, I always tell them it's going to cost you some money to get an attorney, but in the long run, you'll save a lot.
Yeah. Because I think too, you know, some labels, especially if the person don't got an attorney, they get taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And then some labels might want that. Like, oh, you don't have no attorney. Ah, yes.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, that's all part of what business is about, you know, having your advantages to knowing what you're getting into. I mean, the music business is 90% business and 10% music. And that's the reality of it. If you don't have your business together, your music is going to get lost.
Yeah. And so what about your masters? Do y'all own y'all masters or?
It's interesting because the owning the masters wasn't really the same way it is now. You know, now you can own, you know, if you go into the studio and you spend your money, you own your masters. But at that time, you know, the record companies paid for everything in advance, so they owned everything.
Yeah, because, you know, I be hearing like through the news and stuff that a lot of rappers are like selling their masters now. I guess if they like, you know, the finances get tough, you know, they sell their masters, you know, to stay above float or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even saw, I'm not gonna put the artist out here who did it, but I saw an artist, he sold somebody else's masters that was on his label. And I was like, wow.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh. Interesting. That's
crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do you even stay on somebody's label after that? Like that, like you done work your butt off to get wherever you are in your status and your career and everything. And for, what if you fell on hard times? Somebody already, but I don't know if there's nothing he could do about it though. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, unless we know the particulars, we can only speculate.
Yeah. Cause he was his artist. So I don't know. Maybe that has something to do. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was more than like highway robbery.
Wow.
Whatever. But another question I have for you is when it came to your group, do y'all have a diva in the group? Or there's no divas? Everybody was just, you know, everybody was humble.
I think we all take turns. You know, one day is this one, the next day is the next one.
That's a good answer. That's a very good answer. You know, because, you know, sometimes, I don't know. I feel like it takes I've never been in a group, but I can just only imagine. I feel like it takes a lot to just deal with people. And I don't know, when y'all came in, did y'all all know each other or y'all had to get to know each other? What were the relationships like when y'all first started?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, fate just kind of threw us together. We didn't know each other before we got in that rehearsal room. and everybody's life path is kind of directed them there. You know, it's just, I was playing in another band that played in the same rehearsal hall. The lead vocalist, she auditioned for a group called Rolls Royce, and they told her she would sound better with, you know, singing with us. And the keyboard player, she answered an ad that we had in a newspaper that sold refrigerators and furniture. So, you know, everybody has their own story, you know, as to how we just kind of fell into that room together. And then, you know, as we practiced and tried things out and we started developing a sound, like, hey, this is pretty good, you know. And at that time, in those days, you know, you put a what they call a package together where you have a recording, you have a promo picture, and you have a bio of the group, and you just kind of take it around and shopped it around to all the different record companies, you know, which is how they used to do it then, you know. And sometimes the record companies would pass, and sometimes the record companies would be interested. But again, you know, those record companies that would be interested, you know, then of course comes the whole idea about the contract and all of that stuff. So, you know, things were a little more structured, I'll call it, you know, back there. You know, once the music industry got deregulated by our good friend, Mr. Bill Clinton, you know, the record company just kind of, or the record industry kind of just fell into pieces where everybody can kind of do their own thing now. There's no, guard at the gate like the record companies used to be, where they could kind of pick and choose good talent to go get out there and be promoted. It's like now any and everybody can make their own label, make their own recording, you know, get it distributed on, you know, internet radio or wherever they go nowadays, and, you know, get their music heard and can create their own audiences. You know, those people that would may not have gotten the chance to have a record label hear them, well, they get a chance to do their own thing. But the unfortunate part is, you know, there's no one place to go and listen to music anymore like it used to be. You know, everybody would go to the radio and hear what's new. Now, you know, new music is just all over the place and the audiences are all over the place, and there's no real one place to develop large audiences where you can make the same kind of money that musicians used to make before.
Yeah, because like nowadays everybody's streaming.
And you can get it for free. You know, I mean, once you put it on the internet or, you know, digital, you know, people have devices where they can just download your music for free. So again, the artist and musician, they wind up losing out because they can't make a living off of music if people keep downloading it for free.
Yeah, because I've heard a long time ago, and you can let me know if this is true or not. Somebody told me a long time ago that musicians don't make money off of album sales. They make money off of touring.
Correct. Yeah.
And then I said to myself, I can see that.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, when comedians go on tour and they hitting all these cities. And so I can definitely see that. Especially the big cities, like say y'all go on like a 30 city tour, you know, throughout the summer or wherever.
Yeah. It used to be a time where, you know, there were some people that could make a lot of money off of writing and producing. But yeah, you're right. Most of the musicians nowadays, they make their money or make their living off of live performances, you know, whether they're playing in a club every night or they're actually out there going from city to city. And, you know, I mean, it takes a lot of, endurance, mental endurance, physical endurance, psychological endurance, mental endurance to really get out there on the road and try to make a living. Because there's a many of, venues and promoters that are out there just looking to prey on these artists that are out there trying to, you know, play live. And some people have horror stories where, you know, they play all night long and then don't get paid because they're promoted and snuck out somewhere.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about that. I was about to say, have y'all ran into some janky promoters?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, every level runs into promoters that are janky. I mean, I just recently saw one of another artist, Kelly Price, and she was on her Twitter page talking about, you know, she had gotten to some city, I think it was a Houston in Texas, and you know, she couldn't find a promoter to go to the venue to start performing, because the way it works is that, you know, you have to get paid before you get on stage, and the promoter just disappeared. You know, she couldn't find them. So, I mean, it happens on every level. Trust me, not just the, you know, the club circuit, but it happens in the major venues. And a lot of times, unfortunately, you know, the ticket buyer, they don't know what happened or why their artist is not performing. First person they want to blame is the artist, but majority of the time it's not the artist, it's, you know, whatever the promoter or the financial agreement is as to why the artist is not getting on stage.
So now you got to get paid up front. You get paid the whole fee or like half? You get paid like...
Well, I mean, it's always been that way. I mean, artists should always get at least 50% before they get on stage. Well, 50% before they, when they sign a contract. I'm sorry. They should get 50% when they sign the contract and the other 50% before they get on stage.
Yeah, I can kind of see it going left, you know, like you... Like, say y'all get dressed, y'all all be dazzled and stuff. And then y'all get there, y'all ready. Y'all been rehearsing, y'all ready to rock out. And then Cletus don't have the money.
Right. Yeah. It happens a lot. It happens more than you want to know.
Like, anybody seen Cletus?
Right. Right, exactly. We
drove 12 hours.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You know, but again, and it's unfair to the ticket buyer. It's unfair to the audience. They, you know, got their whole evening. They want to go to a venue. They want to see their favorite artist. And then all of a sudden they get the notification the artist is not going to be there and not going to be on stage. Well, the first person they want to blame is the artist, when in fact, it is not the artist, but the actual money people, the promoter, the, you know, producer, or whoever it is for that show, who has not done his, you know, his due diligence for it to be a successful show. And I have to also say, you know, for the promoters and stuff, they take a risk too. You know, they're investing their money hoping that they make a profit, and some concerts make a profit and some concerts don't. And, you know, for a promoter or a producer, or, you know, when I say producer, but a producer of live concerts, you know, they have to pay for everything up front, and then they get all their money back on the back end. And so if you don't have that kind of deep pockets where you can put up, you know, I don't know, 100, 200,000, 300,000, $1 million, you know, where you can put all that money up front to try to put on a concert, then you shouldn't be in the business, because too many artists suffer because the promoter doesn't have his stuff together. I was going to say another word, but we'll just say stuff.
Yeah, because I've been seeing lately, like, what artists been getting paid, or what they've been saying, what they've been getting paid, like, for their shows. And I'd be like, ooh, they getting paid that much? Man.
Yeah, so, but, you know, you have to understand, you know, you're not just paying the artist for that one, whatever, 20 minutes, a half hour that they're on stage, or hour that they're on stage. You're paying the artist for all the hours and the days of rehearsal that they had to put in, you know, that you don't see. You know, you're paying for them to, you know, I don't know, dress the part. Some of them have, you know, a nice stage outfit. Some of them don't. You know, you got to pay for the travel for them to get there. I mean, the concert ticket is paying for a lot of things, not just for the 20 minutes, 30 minutes that they're on stage. They're paying for an actual production of all the details that it takes to get that show going. And even for the promoter, I mean, they've got to pay for security. They've got to pay for insurance. They've got to pay for that venue, that stage, you know, for them to get up there. They've got to pay for the, you know, I don't know, the vendors that are going to be there, if they're going to be there. They have a lot of things that they have to pay for. I mean, the payment of the artist is just a fraction of all the other things that the promoter has to pay for.
So when it comes to the promoter, so the promoter will pay for you to get there. Like, he'll pay for your transportation and everything.
Sure.
Like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to pay for your transportation. They're supposed to pay for your hotel. They're supposed to pay for your, you know, your performance fee. They're supposed to at least feed you the day of the performance, you know, and they've got to pay for your production if you need drums or amps or something like that. You know, they got to make sure that you have security. They got to make sure that you have ground transportation to get from the airport to the hotel, to the hotel, to the venue, to the venue, to the hotel, to the hotel, to the airport.
Hey, I need to get on. I need to go on tour.
So you know,
I need to make it happen. They paying for everything. They paying for everything except for soap and water.
Well, yeah, basically they're paying for everything, man, and that's why, you know. Again, for the ticket buyers to understand, I mean, that's why some of the tickets are, you know, $100. You know, the promoter's got to do his math where he's got to, you know, charge $100 for, you know, let's say 100 people so that he can pay an artist so much amount of money and pay for the transportation and pay for the hotel. So that's why a lot of tickets are so much money, because there's a lot of things the promoter has to pay for.
Now, this is a question I want to ask too, because I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I just want to ask anyway. So when it comes to, like, say you got an entourage, right? They're not paying for your entourage, right? They're just paying for you.
Okay. So, you know, you say entourage, you talking about people that just kind of hang around and follow you? Or are you talking about people that do your hair, your makeup, your sound, your, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, a band doesn't just get up on, well, I say Climax, a band like Climax, they don't get up there and set up their instruments and run up and play and then break down their instruments and go to the hotel. I mean, we have to have a crew that's going to set up our equipment. We've got to have a sound guy that's going to tweak and make sure that the sound that comes out of the speakers is something that the audience is going to enjoy. You know, we got to have security to make sure that the instruments don't get snatched off a stage when we're not there. You know, so, I mean, there's, you know, entourage means, I get it. You know, you got your people that are, you know, giving you encouragement to be on stage. But then there's a whole crew that you have to have, or a whole staff that you have to have, to make sure that the production of your performance is successful.
Yeah, but I'm not even talking about those people. I know about those people. I'm talking about the people from your neighborhood that feel like they got to go everywhere you go. That's what I mean by entourage. I'm talking about those leeches that make it seem like they got to be on stage with you, you know, jumping around, half drunk. I'm talking about them.
Well, we don't have those. we don't have those. I mean, you know, you might have a family member that wants to come to the show, but, you know, we don't have the kind of, like, you know, entourage where they're following us and jumping up on stage. I mean, this is a profession. This is a job. This is a, you know, a craft, a passion. And, you know, we have a certain level of respect for the stage, the audience, you know, the staff that's there at the venue. You know, we're not just gonna, it's not like we're going on vacation. Hey, we're going to play at this so-and-so. It's a vacation. Come on, y'all. Come on, Pookie and them.
No, because, and I mean, I don't know if you had to deal with this, and let me know if you have, but have you ever, in all your time of being a performer, have you ever dealt with, like, people that you know before your fame and everything like that? And they came across, and they was like, oh, so now you sitting up there, I can't be nowhere where you at. So you can't get me up there, you know. I could hold a camera or something, you know. They try to make you feel bad because you didn't elevate it. You're supposed to elevate.
Well, let me say this.
Okay.
If you have a quote-unquote friend like that, they are not a quote-unquote friend.
Yeah, I can see that. You know. Oh, I can't come with you. No. So what you're saying is I can't get no money?
right, exactly. No, that's, I mean, you know, there's different levels of friendships and people's interpretation of what a friend is. But, you know, if you truly have people that love and support you, they're going to, you know, even if they can't make the concert, or even if they know that you can't give out 100 tickets for all your friends to come to the concert, you know, there are people out there, your supporters, your friends, your family. If nothing else, they'll give you a phone call and say, you know, I have a good show. Be careful. Make sure you eat something. I mean, you have people like that. I mean, something like that is more valuable than, you know, trying to get an extra ticket, you know, get an extra seat. You know, if when, especially, you know, traveling musicians, you know, when they come home off the road and people are like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go see so and so, then you have to realize that person is dead dog tired being on the road. Give them some space, let them heal and rest, and then go and support them and ask how the show was or how the tour was. I mean, that type of support is so much more valuable than trying to hang on to every concert that your friend is doing, that your family member is doing. But I mean, I get it. You know, they're excited because you're on stage and people are excited to see you and everything, and they want to get involved in the excitement. But there's so many other levels of support that are missing sometimes.
Like, yeah, leave me be. When you see me coming to the house, don't bother me for 3 days. when you walk by my room, don't even ask me that I eat.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
I got Uber Eats coming through the window. No, don't bother me.
Just stop. You are so funny.
But yeah, that's the thing, man. It's like, the reason why I've asked you too is because I hear so many stories and I wanted to hear from your take, because I just can only imagine. My friends would be like, oh, he done switched up. You can't come. I ain't even gonna call because I don't want to hear it on my phone. I'm gonna text you. You can't come. ... Send. Don't send me nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
Then like they wanna go on social media. Like that's gonna make you change your mind. Oh yeah, people get in position. They wanna make all these statuses about you. Oh, people wanna get in position that they wanna forget where they came from.
Yeah.
Now you're really not coming on stage.
Right. So, right. Yeah.
But it's just sad that it has to be like that. And you know, I hear this saying all the time, and I really do go by this saying when I say everybody can't go with you.
Yeah. 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 You know, especially you when you are an artist. You have to develop a certain discernment to learn and understand who are your true friends and you know, people that support you, and who are just there for the perks. And sometimes that's harder to figure out, you know, especially in the beginning, because you know you're excited for your career jumping off, and so you think everybody else is, you know. But a lot of times people are just there because they want the perks. They want, you know, whatever it is they can get out of the situation, and not even necessarily so much money, but you know, just the excitement and stuff. So it really takes a lot of, I'm going to call it, soul searching, and really looking at the person to see, you know, are they there for you, or are they there because of what you know, what you're into. You know, you have to ask the question, you know, if tomorrow you wake up and you don't have a career anymore, is that person going to still be there?
That is true. Yeah. I really do feel that way as well. And
yeah, I mean, I take my own self, for example. You know, when Climax was up there in the 80s and, you know, records were coming out the sky and everything. I mean, people were, you know, coming by my house and ringing my phone and hanging out and all of that stuff. And then as soon as the record company dropped us in 1990, all of a sudden, all those people, they were no longer around. Oh, you ain't you're not on tour no more. You don't have a record on the radio. You don't have that. And I mean, it was devastating to really find out, you know, that those people were really only there to you know, hang out with somebody that was famous. And all of a sudden, when the fame is over with, all those people were gone.
Yeah, I never got that, because, and I ain't never been famous, not yet at least. We on the rise. But I remember back when I was younger and I was the first one in my crew that had a car. And then my little tours broke down. And then my friends started treating me different. I'm like, wait a minute. Y'all was already the riding Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. But now it's sitting at the shop. Y'all acting different. Oh, so y'all don't want to be on the bus with me now. Okay. Don't worry. Wait till it come out.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
And it's sad that you got to find out that way. But I'd rather find out that way than later down the line, you got to try to decipher it. Then you be like, oh, I see your true colors now. Okay. Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah.
And another part of that too is, you know, the artist has to know themselves. What are you in the industry for? Are you in the industry because it's your passion and you know you want to express your music? Or are you in it because you just want the money and this and the glitz and the glamour and the whatever, the women and the men and the attention? You know, are you really there just for the music? Because if you're there for the music and the passion, there's going to be some ups and downs. And trust me, the downs are so down, it will discourage you.
And that's what I feel about that as well. Like when it comes to, you know, the music, I feel like the people that are in it for their passion, even when they down, they come out so much better because they're not worried about the clout chasing or all the other things that distract them. the music keeps them level-headed, and it allows them to, even when they get down, they can resort back to the music, and they could be using that time to perfect the craft. To be like, man, you know what? I was staring at the wall, and I made the best song ever looking at this cobweb. And, you know, and I'm just thinking that's how, you know, LL Cool J was when he had that song where he's like, when I'm alone in my room and I stirred the wall. And I was like, he had to be bored when he made that song, but it was a good song. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I get you. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, songs can come from some of the most ironic inspirations. I mean, you know, you could be sitting in traffic and see a green car and all of a sudden, oh, no, no, no. Here's a good one. You could be sitting in traffic and all of a sudden see a red Corvette, and then all of a sudden you have a song called Little Red Corvette.
Yep. I'm telling you, man, it was a song that had, I forgot. It's some new little kid song, and they got Corvette in the song. But that's what I'm saying. You don't know what people just out here just people put their favorite food restaurant in the song. They could be talking about Chick-fil-A and ranch. It's a song called Lil Dabba Ranch. So that's, you see what I'm saying? Like, you don't know where people's motivation or their influence coming from.
Yeah.
But the creative process is heavy.
Yeah. And it carries with it a lot of weight. There's a lot of emotional, spiritual, and mental weight that come with creativity. Whether you're being creative with music or creative with painting or creative with clothes, I mean, there's a lot of heaviness that comes with the creativity. I'm not saying that creativity is bad or good, but there's a lot of responsibility with creativity, and it's up to you how it manifests itself.
Yeah.
Do you try to squash it and not write that song or not make that bling bling jacket, or do you let it flow and write that song? And maybe you don't like it too well, but you know, hey, it's a song that came out of your creativity, and there's no good or bad in creativity. It's just creativity.
Because I feel like whatever you feel like making, you should make it. And then tweak it if you feel like it needs to be tweaked later on. Because at least you can say, I did it. Because you may make a song that you may not think is a good song, but it may end up being a hit.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah. And we're so critical of our own creativity. Where, you know, you could draw a straight line and think, oh, that's so stupid. And then the next person see the straight line and think it's the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, and I done seen pictures like that. I done seen a whole bunch of paint splashed on a canvas. Somebody be like, oh, that's art. I be like, what is that? But somebody might pay a lot of money. Be like, oh, magnifique. You be like, what is this?
Right.
But I'm not hating on that person's art, but I'm just like, I see a whole bunch of colors. But somebody can say, oh, Picasso. I'm like, oh, whatever. So.
Well, and you have to have the courage to appreciate it on your own and not because somebody else likes it. Whether it's music or whether it's art, you know, you have to be secure and confident in your own right to say, yeah, I like that music. Even if your best friend says, oh, I don't like that song. You know, if you like the song. Just because your best friend don't mean it's not a good song. It's just not their cup of tea.
Because that song could do it for you. It don't have to do it for him.
Right. But, you know, it takes courage to sometimes go outside of your, you know, your social circle and say, yeah, I don't like that song. Not everybody else is looking at you like, what? You must be crazy. But it may not tickle your fancy or whatever, you know, might be your cup of tea or whatever they say nowadays.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know. It's always something.
Yeah.
And we just got to be able to be just in tune with whatever we choose to do. Whichever way we choose to let our pen drop on that paper, we had to be okay with the outcome.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Whoever feel it, they feel it. And whoever don't, you know, like, I remember that one song, I forgot. I can't remember the name of the song, but Prince wrote it. And before he started playing the song, he was like, I just want to tell you guys that this song right here is for, I don't know if you're going to like it, but, you know, I wrote it. And I'm like, hey, do your thing. And everybody love that song.
Oh, wow, yeah.
He grabbed on him and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I just know that he stuck to his guns, and, you know, it was what it was, and I was just like, man.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about it. But at the end of the day, we can only be us.
Yeah.
And how we choose to be in this life, you either going to accept us or not.
Right, right.
But Miss Cheryl, I want to say thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for letting me enjoy you today.
You're welcome. You
have been a treat. I can't wait to tell my manager about it, because I know she gonna call me and ask me.
Oh yeah.
But also let people know where they can find you.
Oh, sure, sure. You know, you can always find us at klimaxx.com. That's spelled KLYMAXX.com. Our social media is there. We're on Facebook, Klimax Music. We're on YouTube/Klimax Music. We're on Twitter, Klimax, and Instagram, Klimax Music. We're on all those different social medias. Just go to the website, klimaxx.com, and you'll find all the links right there. And I also invite your listeners to sign up for our newsletter that also has our calendar on it to let them know where we're going to be playing close to them sometime soon. Just go right there on the website and look on the left-hand side there where you can sign up for our newsletter.
Miss Cheryl, thank you again. This has been another episode of Vibe With Me. I'm your host, Rashad. This has been Miss Cheryl Cooley, and we out. You know, man.